This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of sacroiliitis from the spine section on orthobullets.com. Let's start this episode with a quick summary. Sacroiliitis is an inflammatory condition of the sacroiliac joint that can cause persistent low back and posterior pelvic pain. Diagnosis is made with MRI studies with contrast showing fluid/inflammation at the SI joint and possible abscess. Treatment is usually non-operative with NSAIDs and rest, with IV antibiotics reserved for infections. Surgical debridement is indicated in the presence of an abscess. Now, let's get into the episode. Starting with epidemiology, in terms of demographics, sacroiliitis most commonly presents in teen to middle-aged individuals. Males are more commonly affected than females. As far as associated conditions, sacroiliitis is commonly part of ankylosing spondylitis or Reiter syndrome. Moving on to etiology, the pathophysiology of sacroiliitis can stem from a traumatic event or infection. Keep in mind that pregnancy may lead to an increased incidence in some females. Sacroiliitis often stems from chronic inflammation of the SI joints and can lead to fibrosis and ossification within the SI joint. Associated conditions with sacroiliitis include ankylosing spondylitis, Reiter syndrome, and joint arthritis. Ankylosing spondylitis is associated with HLA B27. And keep in mind that 1-2% of all individuals will have HLA B27. Reiter syndrome is characterized by oligoarticular arthritis, conjunctivitis, and urethritis. To learn more about ankylosing spondylitis and Reiter syndrome in more detail, be sure to look out for their separate respective podcast episodes. Moving on to presentation of sacroiliitis, symptoms can include pain with prolonged standing, difficulty climbing stairs, generalized low back pain, weakness from hip musculature on the affected side, and morning stiffness. On physical exam, the Faber test in these patients may elicit pain with flexion, abduction, and external rotation of the hip. Ankylosing spondylitis is associated with spinal flexion deformities starting in the T and L spines. Moving on to imaging, radiographs may show some erosive changes in the bone, but it's not specific. Radiographs may also show calcifications or sclerosis within the SI joint. MRI is the study of choice in the setting of sacroiliitis. Be sure to use gadolinium, and remember that the T2 sequences will show fluid/inflammation at the SI joint and maybe an abscess. As far as studies, labs to obtain include a white blood cell count, which is usually normal, but can be elevated with infection. Other labs include ESR and CRP, which are usually elevated, blood cultures, which are positive in 50% of patients, and also HLA B27. Be sure to also check for rheumatoid factor, as this should be negative for true ankylosing spondylitis. Treatment of sacroiliitis depends on the cause. So in the setting of infection, this will be treated with IV antibiotics and maybe surgery. IV antibiotics are typically used until the symptoms and the CRP resolve, and then you will put the patient on oral antibiotics. Surgery may be necessary if IV antibiotics fail or if there's a large abscess. Sacroiliitis secondary to trauma or overuse is typically treated with rest, activity modification, NSAIDs, and corticosteroid injections. Remember that most cases of sacroiliitis secondary to trauma or overuse resolve with soft tissue rest and activity modification. Pregnancy is another potential cause of sacroiliitis, and this is typically treated with observation, as sacroiliitis in the setting of pregnancy typically resolves after childbirth. Finally, sacroiliitis can also be part of a larger spondylopathy. And in these cases, patients can be treated with aggressive physical therapy, NSAIDs, and TNF inhibitors. Keep in mind that severe symptoms may require TNF inhibitors or other similar medications. Finally, in terms of prognosis of sacroiliitis, this depends on the cause, but most patients will eventually resolve the episode and continue without issues. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over one quick question to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic might be tested. First question. A 23-year-old female patient with a history of IV drug use presents with worsening lower back and right hip pain that is worse with weight bearing for the past several days. She has a history of multiple soft tissue infections and abscesses that have resolved with bedside INDs and oral antibiotic regimens. Current vitals are significant for a blood pressure of 87/62, heart rate of 105, respiratory rate of 28, temperature of 102 degrees Fahrenheit, and an SpO2 of 97%. The physical exam is remarkable for pain with lateral compression of the iliac crest, but a painless range of motion of bilateral hips. Peripheral blood cultures were significant for gram-positive cocci in clusters and chains. Prior to the onset of symptoms, the patient denies any history of lower back or leg pain. On imaging, there is a normal AP pelvis radiograph. The lateral radiograph of the lumbar spine shows L4, L5 ischemic spondylolisthesis. A sagittal T2 MRI of the lumbar spine shows L4, L5 spondylolisthesis and mild degenerative disc changes at L4, L5. Coronal and axial T2 MRI images of the pelvis demonstrate increased signal intensity at the right SI joint, consistent with sacroiliitis without definitive abscess formation. What is the most appropriate next step in this scenario? And the choices are 1. Initiate first-generation cephalosporin pharmacotherapy. 2. Proceed with surgical incision and drainage of the L4, L5 disc space followed by instrumented fusion. 3. Urgent incision and drainage of the right SI joint. 4. Initiate vancomycin and clindamycin pharmacotherapy. And 5. Urgent incision and drainage of the right hip. The correct answer to this question is 4. Initiate vancomycin and clindamycin pharmacotherapy. So the patient is an IV drug user presenting with septic shock from acute sacroiliitis without an apparent abscess on magnetic resonance imaging. The appropriate next step would be to start vancomycin and clindamycin, given the patient's history concerning for resistant organisms and Gram stain, suggesting concomitant streptococcus and staphylococcus involvement. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, initiate first-generation cephalosporin pharmacotherapy is incorrect, as the patient is at high risk for infection with resistant organisms from the intravenous drug use, which necessitates vancomycin as an initial agent. Once the infecting organism is confirmed, adjustments to the antibiotic regimen can be made accordingly. Additionally, the Gram stain demonstrated Gram-positive cocci and chains, suggesting possible streptococcal involvement, which should be addressed with clindamycin. Answer 2, proceed with surgical incision and drainage of the L4, L5 disc space followed by instrumented fusion is incorrect, as the patient does have evidence of grade 1 ischemic spondylolisthesis at L4, L5, but the history and MRI imaging do not suggest this as the cause of the patient's current symptoms. Answer 3, urgent incision and drainage of the right SI joint is incorrect, as the MRI imaging of the pelvis does indicate right-sided sacroiliitis consistent with an infectious process. However, surgical treatment for sacroiliitis is recommended if the patient fails an initial trial of antibiotics or there is a discrete abscess. Finally, answer 5, urgent incision and drainage of the right hip is incorrect, as the physical exam was unremarkable for septic arthritis of the hip, given that painless range of motion was present. To quickly review, sacroiliitis can be the result of inflammatory arthropathies such as ankylosing spondylitis or from an infection. Septic arthritis of the SI joint is relatively uncommon, but can occur in patients with a history of IV drug use. If patients are presenting with signs of septic shock, the most important treatment step is to initiate broad-spectrum antibiotics that cover the most commonly involved organisms. In most cases, infectious sacroiliitis can be treated solely with antibiotics. If the patient fails a regimen of appropriate antibiotics, surgical debridement may be necessary. Allison et al. Performed a retrospective review of 215 IV drug-abusing patients presenting with bone and/or joint infections over a 7-year period. The authors reported an oxacillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus infection rate increase from 21% to 73% at the end of the study period, with osteomyelitis having a significantly increased involvement with gram-negative rods, anaerobes, and polymicrobial infections. The authors recommend initiating broad-spectrum antibiotics in patients with a history of IV drug abuse presenting with bone or joint infections. Buckman et al. Reviewed antibiotic administration and stewardship in the setting of sepsis. The author stated that the prompt administration, that is within 1 hour of recognition, of broad-spectrum antibiotics is the most important factor for patient survival when septic shock develops. The authors recommended including clindamycin pharmacotherapy in patients presenting with septic shock and possible streptococcal involvement. They concluded that early antibiotic administration is the most important factor in the treatment of patients with septic shock. That's all for this review about sacroiliitis. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you aren't already, Be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.